Totally Football Show in a festive mood today, with the title race written off already, like my letter to Santa asking for a proper title race, the arrival of the sack bringing better games for Palace and West Ham, and repeated showings of the Potters and their dreadful spell on the TV. We'll have a look at all of that. Salute Real Madrid, Kaká, Hearts and Udinese. Test Italian football knowledge. Find out who's everyone's favourite player to watch. Have a rummage through the relegation picture and pick through the midweek League Cup fixtures. That's the Totally Football Show. It's the most wonderful time of the Monday. Who's in today then? Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Hello, Ian. Ian Irving.
Hello.
Hi, Ian. Ooh. And Chris Powell.
Hello.
Hi, Chris Powell, Charlton Derby Southend legend.
Many years ago.
Well, you've had a busy and storied career thus far.
Mm.
I've got many questions to ask you, actually. But thanks very much for joining us. At the moment, are you involved, are you affiliated with the Spurs organisation?
Yes, I am. It's a little bit ad hoc, to be honest. It's a scouting role, and it's just to keep me busy and entertained at the weekends.
Right.
And it certainly has. I've watched some good games, some good players, and some not so good players. So, I'm involved watching players and sending in reports, but it's not a full-time gig. I'm still looking to become a manager and coach in the future.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, should we start with Spurs?
Absolutely.
That was pretty big game, that one. It was their turn for a spanking. You know, they were the next one of the other top six teams lined up outside the headmaster's office. In they went. What was it, 4-1 in the end? Could have been more.
It could have been more.
Should have been more, Ian?
Well, a missed penalty straight away, yeah. Should have been more just based on that. I've watched Tottenham a few times now in these sorts of matches this season, and I think every single time they've completely and utterly disappointed me. In terms of Manchester City at home, I've done a few matches there recently where teams have come and parked the bus, shut up shop, whatever it is. And it really annoys me that people say, well, they should be having a go. Because when you have a go, that's what happens. Mm. That's what happened to Tottenham this weekend. They are probably one of the best equipped sides to play against this Manchester City in that sort of manner, on the break, high pressing, and they got absolutely battered.
Mm. Any kind of approach, Man City have dealt with it. And I think one of the impressive things this weekend was the fact they did it without David Silva. Chris, did you see the game?
I did indeed. Being a Spurs fan, boyhood Spurs fan, I was watching it through my fingers because Spurs were caught between two stools, really. They wasn't sure whether to park the bus or actually really go for it. And when they went for it, they got opened up. And when they stayed deep, they got opened up. So they were caught in between. They were missing Sanchez and Alderweireld, who are two key players. If you're going to City, you need your strongest defenders to at least try and eke out a point. But
City are missing a couple of defenders of their own. But Daniel Story making a similar point in Football 365, where he says Guardiola attracted criticism for describing Tottenham as the Harry Kane team. Maybe the Toby Alderweireld team would have been more accurate. Because his absence has kind of coincided with this colossal slump in Spurs' fortunes.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, when Tottenham's composure goes, it really, really goes. I mean, that mistake for, I think, the fourth goal was appalling. Far below the standard you'd expect of Tottenham. And the indiscipline on the pitch. I mean, Dele Alli and Harry Kane, both quite fortunate to stay on the pitch, I think.
There was a lot of surprise that David Silva wasn't in the starting lineup. You were so upset because he's your favourite player that you turned and left the stadium immediately.
In disgust, yeah.
In disgust.
Yeah, I wasn't so good, shall we say, pre-match at the Etihad at the weekend. When you say my favourite player, I need to put that in context, really. Having worked in Manchester, covering football and Liverpool for the best part of a decade, he's been my favourite individual to watch. In terms of the way that he now is showing numbers, which to me, now he's sort of giving people a clear reason to understand what he's doing. I just think he's like a metronome. He just keeps things ticking over. His balance, his ability to change direction, he doesn't give the ball away. De Bruyne has been getting the plaudits, and rightly so, the headlines for some of these incredible passes that he's making. But David Silva's consistency in his pass, his movement, his intelligence, the way he positions himself, the way he's reinvented himself. And the biggest thing for me, he's really aggressive. He doesn't get anywhere near enough credit for how aggressive he is. And I was speaking recently to Vincent Kompany, previewing one of the matches just after Silva had signed his new contract. And he said that the first day in training, they all looked at him and he was this short lad with long hair, just landed from Valencia, and they all thought, oh, he's going to get pushed around a little bit. And for the first few weeks, he did. But then after that, he's turned into what you'd probably describe as a little terrier. And that endears him to me only just that little bit more.
Magnificent. Chris, do you have a favourite player to watch?
I love watching Wilfried Zaha.
Do you?
I actually feel, I know he's had a go at being at a top six club, and I think the circumstances at the time were not conducive to seeing him really show his real talents. But at Crystal Palace, he is the go-to man. He is the top player for them.
We'll talk about Palace in a second. Yep. I'll pick up on that, if I may. Go on then. Tony Hibbert, is it, Ian?
No. We're talking present players, aren't we?
Yeah.
Adebayo Ekwefemwa at Wickham.
Okay.
Who, every time you look at him, we were talking about this on the league show, it's like that bumblebee thing where bumblebees technically shouldn't be able to fly.
Right.
Despite his formidable frame, he's actually, at his level, one of the most effective footballers in Europe. Mm. He's been involved in so many goals. He's in the leading goal scorer chart and the top assist chart.
All right.
He's one of the most effective players in League Two, and Wickham pushing hard for promotion.
All right.
So it's always a joy to watch him play.
Okay. Who's the better passer in this Man City team, Kevin De Bruyne or Ederson?
Well, De Bruyne, yeah, but Ederson is phenomenal, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember Manuel Neuer at Bayern. I think he said of himself that if he was an outfield player, he would be kind of in the third division quality, that he could play professionally third division football, Bundesliga, dry. I mean, Ederson, where would he? What kind of team would he get into?
Well, Manchester City's midfield if they have an injury crisis, I guess.
Wow, that would be amazing. Really mess everyone up?
If Pep Guardiola gets bored, he's going to have to do something to keep himself entertained, isn't he? So why not sort of turn Ederson into a central midfielder? I think, actually, just on this, to be serious for a moment, a lot of question marks were placed and a lot of eyebrows raised when Ederson was signed for City in the summer, including within the hierarchy at City as well. A few of the decision makers weren't completely aware, stroke, completely sold on the idea of signing him, especially after they'd bought Claudio Bravo the year before. But already we're seeing exactly why, aren't we? And yes, he's a very able goalkeeper. Yes, he makes great saves. He organises the defence. He's brave. He comes to claim things that other keepers sort of look at and stand back at. But he offers a really key tactical option for Manchester City, which you saw against Tottenham. If a team wants to go and do that and press high up the pitch, especially from goal kicks, he's quite willing to just smash the ball 70 yards over everyone's head to players who have purposefully positioned themselves in offside positions, which of course aren't offside from goal kicks. And ordinarily, keepers have got no chance of making it, but Ederson does. And that's been a big difference for City as well.
Some of the distribution, which is a really boring term, because it's audacious, the range of passing that he's certainly displayed against Spurs.
Is Ian saying they play long balls?
I am.
Can I just say, Man City have got history with playing keepers on the pitch. They did it with David James.
Up front, yeah. They didn't.
So
yeah.
whether they've won the league maybe a few weeks before the end of the season, well, the way it's going, they might win it in February, but Ederson might come onto the pitch. His distribution is one of the missing links from last season. Bravo didn't have that. He was comfortable with the ball at his feet, but he didn't make the saves. Ederson makes the saves. But as Ian quite rightly said, his distribution from the back on the high press basically passes the high press and puts them on the attack. It's quite amazing, really. Mm. Quite amazing.
If I can join this love in as well, it's his movement as well. If you've got both centre-backs in the opposition half, you need your goalkeeper some way out of the penalty area.
Yeah.
He's so confident in that. And he's doing all this in his first season in a league where we've been brought up to understand that you need a season to settle in. And he's already at top level.
He's scary. Scary. By the way, there's a lot of talk in the last day or so about Man City preparing a new contract for Pep Guardiola, trying to establish some kind of dynasty there. Pep's kind of noted for his willingness to stick his hat on and move on when his work is done. What do you think, Ian? Is he likely to be staying beyond his 3 years?
I'm not sure. I think if you ask Manchester City fans, players, staff, officials, owners, every single one of them, having seen what they've seen so far, certainly this season, maybe not last season, but certainly this season, it's like asking children, do you want an extra scoop of ice cream? You know, there's absolutely no way they'd turn it down. Whether he will or not, I don't know. People better placed than me, having witnessed Barcelona and Bayern Munich, say that the intensity of his work means that he ends up extremely tired. And he's said many times already that this is the most difficult challenge he's had in his managerial career. Certainly the things he learnt last season, it was the steepest learning curve, he said in his words, that he's had so far. So based on that, if he lasts more than 3 years, he's obviously adapted better to the scenario of the intensity than in the past.
Who can stop Man City? Well, there's probably only one team, and we'll be talking about them after this.
Listeners, our partnership with Paddy Power helps to keep this podcast free. And speaking of free, when you join Paddy's Rewards Club, every time you place 5 bets of £10 or more on any sport in a single week, Paddy will give you a free £10 bet the following week. Sign up now at paddypower.com. T's and C's apply. Max £10 bonus per person per week. Specific odds required. Exclude shops and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Yeah, if Pep's going to record a record-breaking season and match his 19 wins in a row at Bayern, he needs to beat Bournemouth at home, Newcastle away, and then make a trip to Selhurst Park. And that's the thing. That's the team, Chris Powell, where it's all going to come unstuck. Inside the Far Post, writing in today, says, does anyone else have Man City's trip to Palace on New Year's Eve penciled in as where their winning run might skid to halt? Yes, Inside the Far Post, I have. It's New Year's Eve. Strange things happen around that time of year. And it's this incredible Roy Hodgson Palace. How good are they, Chris?
They have really picked up as a team, as a unit. I've managed to watch them 3 or 4 times this season. And they have some very, very good players. They're playing in a 4-4-2, which many people might say is old-fashioned, but it's how they do it. And the players who are key to that working, which is Loftus-Cheek and Zaha, without a doubt. Zaha is their kingpin. And if he turns up on New Year's Eve and they play to their full capacity, as you say, stranger things have happened. I can't see it personally, the way Manchester City are going, but Palace at Selhurst is quite a different proposition with the fans. With,
yeah, Chelsea discovered that, didn't they?
Absolutely, they did. And the luck is just going into their favour. And they're working hard to earn that luck. They've had the Benteke affair, which was quite a unique situation. But they've dealt with that. He's now scoring. Zaha is scoring and producing. And that would be an intriguing game. Really will be. But I can't see it. I think Manchester City, no matter who plays in their 11, they're going to find a way to win.
We'll talk on January the 1st. Ian?
Yeah, I could see it happening. I could definitely see it happening. Complacency is a big problem for Man City now. It's going to be really difficult to keep that intensity up for every game, particularly when it's such a big gap. And when everyone in the media is saying, yeah, it's done, title race is over, when bookies are paying out, to keep on doing that, particularly against a team like Palace, who can really kill you on the break. You know, I'm not sure if I'd be confident to put money on it, but I can certainly envisage it.
You're quite happy just to say some words?
And yes, yeah. Always happy to fill silences.
Palace coming off a 3-0 win this weekend away at Leicester. Something of a surprise given that they hadn't scored in their previous 10 matches on the road, and Leicester were in absolutely terrific form. I did not see this coming.
No, I don't think Leicester did either.
No.
They've been doing great. But Benteke redeeming himself. Apparently in the dressing room, everyone's been quite cool about it. I'd imagine they weren't initially with him missing that penalty. Because had he not missed that penalty, Palace would be 12th now.
Right, as opposed to
14th.
14th.
Which is already pretty impressive. So if you've got Benteke there, you've got a physical edge to the attack to go with the pace and invention of Zaha. So you've got multiple ways to hurt people. And that's what they did to Leicester. Leicester, very flat.
I was going to say, I think Roy Hodgson should get some credit for the way he's handled the aftermath of the Bournemouth penalty fiasco and then the Watford game where they were poor. But scored 2 in the last, 4 minutes of the game. And then they go to a Leicester side who put aside Southampton in the week. I mean, it could have been 8. But then no Okazaki, who was key to that. No Andy King, who scored as well. And they just looked flat, Leicester. And Palace took full advantage. And Hodgson, we know what happened with him with England and Iceland. But to redeem himself at his age, to come back and have that zest and put in... I mean, Palace were in an absolute mess.
Yeah.
I mean, they just didn't know what they were doing. To gamble on Roy and OK, the season's not over yet, but he's just given them a bit of balance, a bit of know-how. People always talk about organisation, but I think it's just him. And sometimes he doesn't get the credit he should deserve after all these years of managing in Italy and Switzerland and in Scandinavia. He's just brought calmness to a decent squad.
Will he be able to hang on to Zaha? You were talking before about, you know, he deserves a chance at a bigger club, and he's such a talent. He's not cup-tied. You've got a January transfer window coming up. I'm wondering if the rumours, are they already flying, Ian?
About Wilfried Zaha?
Yeah.
I don't know if they're flying, but they're simmering under
are
the
they
surface.
Simmering?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we know, Chris talked about it before a little bit. We know how it went for Wilfried Zaha at Manchester United. So I think with clubs now looking towards him, they'll have to bear that situation in mind. Obviously, he was Sir Alex Ferguson's final signing at United and actually never worked with him because of his retirement. So I guess that was a pretty significant factor. There were other factors, I'm sure, but he's a few years older. He looks a better footballer now than before. He looks like a more mature person than before.
He's 25, 26.
Right, okay. Prime.
A good age, as they say. But like Chris was saying before, you know, he's almost carrying Crystal Palace's hopes at the moment. I wouldn't say single-handedly, because again, we sort of talked about some of the other key personalities in that team as well. And I'm really intrigued, actually, about Loftus-Cheek. I mean, how good do you think he could be, Chris?
Well, he's playing out of position. He's playing sort of wide right or wide left, but very narrow. It's not his natural position. Over the years, I've watched him for Chelsea's 23s and... he's always been a number 10 or a central midfielder. So Roy has got to have some credit for cajoling him to playing in that role out of position. A real talent, obviously played very well for England in his debut. The thing with Wilfried Zaha is I can't see him at the two Manchesters. I can't see him at a Chelsea. I can't see him at a Liverpool. So I can only really see him at Arsenal or Spurs. And I know Palace, it would have to be north of 50, 60 million. I don't think they're going to pay that. So I can see him staying through January till the end of the season at least.
Right.
Obviously, if Palace go down, different proposition then. But no, I can see him staying.
Yeah, really fair. Arsenal may have a couple of vacancies.
Well, they certainly will. Yeah,
yeah, very, very true. Roy's not the only one turning around a team that was previously struggling, because, of course, David Moyes has gone in at West Ham and they had a 3-0 win as well. This one at Stoke. West Ham are now beaten Chelsea, drawn with Arsenal and absolutely monstered the Potters. Clean sheets in all three. How must Slaven Bilic... I'm going to ask this delicately to you. How must Slaven Bilic be feeling now, Chris? For example, when you left Huddersfield... They were in all sorts of woe down the wrong end of the championship.
Yeah.
And whilst on one hand you must be delighted to see your former team doing well, the people you work with, on another hand, do you feel like, where was that?
No, I don't. I'll tell you why. Because it's a different situation. David Wagner came in with the same group of players and they finished 16th, 17th below where I finished. But what happened was he was able to move 12 players out and bring in another 12 players, utilise the German market, which he obviously knows. They were able to spend money. I never spent a penny. So it's slightly different parameters. So I understand that. I get that. So, you know, so it's great. I'm actually really pleased for Huddersfield, because it just shows that it can happen with backing, with coaching. So I have no issue with that. Slaven may be thinking, why didn't Arnautovic run as hard for me as he's running now for David Moyes? Because, I mean, it was the Arnautovic show, really, against Stoke. It was unreal.
Sorry, Chris. I loved his performance against Stoke.
It was brilliant.
We just don't... I don't know. These days, you don't often see that sort of character from a player. It was almost like watching a pantomime at this sort of season. And, you know, he was getting booed. When he missed, the crowd were cheering. He was giving iron signs to the fans. Even Mark Hughes had a go as he went off the pitch. And, of course, inevitably, he had to score a goal as well. And I just thought it was fun. I was literally sat watching most of the second half because obviously it got delayed a little bit, just laughing my head off at it. I just thought it was brilliant. Obviously, Stoke fans will see it differently, and I can understand why they would feel that way towards him, certainly when he's sort of given a bit back. But they both sort of gave as good as they got, and I just thought the whole thing was extremely entertaining.
Yeah. There's a point sometimes at a club where you almost want your team to fail because it might hasten change. And I wonder if maybe we've now reached that point at the erstwhile Britannia.
Well, if you watch the footage of West Ham's third goal, Sacco, you can actually see Stoke fans applauding it in that really, really kind of aggressive, yeah, do it again. Because it really has gone awful for Mark Hughes. They've conceded 39 goals at the halfway point.
And surprisingly, they've got the personnel. I know Zuma was missing this weekend, was he not?
It's a decent enough squad. They bought Kevin Vimmer in. Mm. Butland's back from injury.
Yeah.
Did, of course, take that big punt on Sadio Berahino that hasn't yet paid off. I still don't think he's actually scored. In fact, I think it may be getting on for 2 years since he scored.
Wow.
It just looks like it's gone horribly, horribly stagnant. And Stoke fans have been saying this for a long time, only to be told once again that they should be very careful what they wish for. But they're just 1 point above the relegation zone now with the worst goal difference in the division. They've actually got a worse away record than Palace now, and Palace only scored their first goal away on Saturday. I have a feeling that even though the Coates family have reaffirmed their support to Mark Hughes, I think that will be tested this weekend. They have West Brom at home, and anything less than a victory, I think, will be the end of Hughes.
Wow. All right. And we'll talk more about the last weekend's games and what's in prospect. League Cup quarterfinals, of course, excitingly, very shortly. But after this, it's a trip to the Why World of Football. Ian McIntosh, the title race is back on. Why? Because, okay, go on, tell us why.
Because Hearts thumped Celtic.
They
did. No one saw that one coming.
No, 69 games they'd gone without defeat, 585 days, and they fall to a 4-0 thumping, featuring 16-year-old Harry Cochran scoring his first goal for the Jam Tarts. And also, as Michael Schwarzenbach points out, Chris, you'll find this exciting, two goals from Manuel Milinkovic, which is interesting because, as you saw, I'm not sure how they're related, actually. Sergei Milinkovic scored a brace himself this weekend for Lazio in a very exciting 3-3 draw with Atalanta.
It was indeed. I mean, I only caught the last 20 minutes, but it was a terrific game. Atalanta, as you know, have been a real surprise package this year, and they've got a real exciting Europa League draw against Dortmund.
Borussia Dortmund. Wow. Funny you should mention Borussia Dortmund, Chris. Mm. Because Peter Stöger has just made it two wins in a week. Remember how they hadn't had a win since like September 1983? And he's come in, having had just one win himself all season, got fired by the bottom team in the Bundesliga, and he's just two straight wins. Brilliant. Bayern Munich are 11 points clear because they won, but they only just won. It was 1-0 against Stuttgart. Sven Ulreich saving a 95th-minute penalty. In Italy, Inter lost their first game of the season. A lot of the fans pointing to the presence of Eric Tohir, their former owner, in the stands. When he arrives, they don't win. Basically, he's regarded as extremely bad luck for them. Also bad luck for them was probably the fact that they played midweek, which they're not used to doing. And the fact that Udinese, who feature, of course, Kevin Lasagna, who we all love from his Carpi days, and he scored, actually, are now being managed by Massimo Oddo. And I think he's had four straight wins since coming in at Udinese, which is a real surprise. Now, you're smiling in an indulgent fancy that way, Ian Irving. But the thing about this is he's another of... You know how you have clubs that spawn a whole generation of managers, yeah? Juventus would be a prime example. Would Man United be one? Maybe not so much. But Lazio, Sven-Göran Eriksson, bizarrely seems to bequeath the world a truly extraordinary... A bunch, Johan Cruyff, that's who I'm thinking of. There you go. But look, you've got Nesta, who's doing all right. Simeone, who's been pretty brilliant. Roberto Mancini, won a title or two. And Simone Inzaghi, as well as No, Pippo never was under Sven, but Simone Inzaghi, who's, you know, now at Lazio doing great things. You had him for a bit, didn't you, Sven?
I did, yeah.
And there's another one for the list.
Well, he's... thanks for that, yeah. He's a very interesting man.
Sven-Göran Eriksson.
Very, very interesting man. I know basically everyone knows him just mainly from the England job, but of course he had sojourns at Manchester City and Leicester, but he's a very interesting man. I really like Sven.
It's an interesting word that you're using, interesting, because it's so kind of multi-use,
it's a wrong sport,
isn't
Steve
it, really?
Davis, isn't it?
Yeah. But No, because the thing is, he comes across a little bit like a very high-end dentist or something. quite, you know, anaesthetic and sterile and all that. But he's a man who knows how to live, Chris.
He certainly does. Yeah. When you're a member of staff, you certainly know how to live when you're with Sven. Oh, there's no stories. It's just he takes care of his staff. He takes care of his players. He was a fitness fanatic.
Was he?
Which not many people know. He was very good in the dressing room. He's been successful, so he must have something.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at his record in Italy and Portugal.
Yeah.
I know he's been in China recently. He's well-travelled, speaks 5 or 6 languages. I mean, he's a very interesting man.
He certainly is.
Say.
Certainly is. In other Italian news, Ian, you're familiar with Benevento?
Yes.
Yeah, they lost again.
Yeah. No change there.
Yeah. 17 games they've had now. They've only picked up 1 point. It was, of course, against Gennaro Gattuso's Milan, who continue to struggle. They did beat Verona in the Cup midweek, but they then went and lost 3-0 to them this weekend. Had Souza sent off. And also, as we probably mentioned, UEFA have said no, they don't think that their finances add up. So there's trouble in store there. Ooh, Kaká's retired. Kaká. I know a lot of people think, hang on, he did already? No, he didn't. No, he has just retired now. Kaká, who was the last man to win the Ballon d'Or before the present duopoly, closed it in their steely grip. And one title's all over. Are you a big fan? Here's a question, if you want. Cy Ram says, where does Kaká stand among the pantheon of modern-day Brazilian greats like Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Cafu and Roberto Carlos? Or Roberto Carlos, if you want.
I don't know, really. I think he was excellent for a period, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. I remember seeing him play for AC Milan against Manchester United in the Champions League. I forget exactly what year it was, but I think he scored twice at Old Trafford. And United had quite a makeshift defence out back then. They had a few injuries at the back, but he was majestic. And then the return leg was 3-0 at the San Siro, I think. And again, he played really, really well. But he sort of went to Real Madrid, and I don't know, really.
Yeah.
From my sort of conscience, he seemed to get lost from there, really.
I think that's fair.
Had one of the best 45 minutes I've seen in ages. Unfortunately, it was at Istanbul in 2005. But before half-time, he was incredible.
Yeah.
That might have been the same year, actually.
2007, of course, he pretty much ran that final against Liverpool, yeah. in which Milan exacted some measure of revenge.
It's not what you remember, though, is it?
No. He's a tremendously graceful player, but I think the difference is that he had none of the frippery and trickery of a Ronaldinho, which is in no way to kind of undervalue the importance of such things. But he was a much purer kind of player, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. I mean, he look back on his career and you tend to just remember AC Milan in the main. Mm. The odd top-end performance for Brazil. But for me, it wouldn't be up in the top 10 of the Rivaldos and Ronaldos. It wouldn't be there for me. But as you say, a graceful player, elegant, had everything that you want for a Brazilian. But happy retirement, Kaká.
Was he enough of a character? Is that what our issue is? Because you've named some of these memorable Brazilian footballers, right. And they were all colourful characters, weren't they? Mm. Many of them were.
Chain-smoking doctors, that kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. I just wonder whether he was flamboyant enough,
right,
beyond the field.
He was a Christian, wasn't he?
Well, he still very much is. That. I mean, his retirement announcement is Father in Heaven. Mm. What an incredible journey it's been. I'm ready for the next one.
Mm. Yeah.
With the trademark "I belong to Jesus" T-shirt.
See, I remember that about him as well. Yeah, I remember that particular T-shirt and the celebration as well. But yeah, he certainly didn't get himself involved in the extracurricular that other Brazilian footballers have. So.
Right. Okay, we'll take a little break and then we'll be back with more football. Listeners to footballing podcasts will know that there's enough tough decisions to make these days without having to worry about which razor to use. So why don't you take the hassle out of your shaving routine by signing up with our pals Cornerstone. Never run out of blades, never need to shop again. Just let them know how often you shave and they'll take care of the rest. Get £10 off your first order and find out more about your perfect shave box at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Arsenal. They beat Newcastle 1-0. The goal was scored by Ian
Mesut Ozil.
How good was the goal?
The strike has been talked about a lot because it was a pure strike, certainly. But I really, really, really admired far more his positioning for that goal. Because if you watch what happens, as the ball, I can't remember exactly who it came off, I think it was a defender trying to clear it, as he's headed the ball away, Mesut Ozil has just taken exactly the right number of steps back to predict perfectly where that ball is going to fall for him to produce that strike. And I just think that the steps backward are far more impressive than even the strike, as good
really?
As it was.
See, I feel, and this is going to be controversial, that there's no way I could have scored a goal like that, but I could get under it the way that Mesut did. From my time playing Ultimate Frisbee, I'm pretty confident that I would have read the flight.
You've just undone any sort of credibility that statement had, by the way.
No. It's a different discipline, but the principles, I think I'm right in saying, Chris, are entirely the same. Did you enjoy that goal? Are you a fan of Mesut Ozil?
I am, because he's a bit misunderstood sometimes for me, because he's graceful, he's a thinker. So, as Ian just quite rightly said, he quickly measured and thought about what was happening with the ball, the trajectory. He could have stayed where he was and it would have been a different type of strike. But to be so measured and clear in his thinking to step back and then attack it the way he did, I mean, that's a mark of a very, very clever player.
Yeah, beautiful strike. Mm. Beautiful strike. RM says, what should Arsenal's plan be for life after Ozil and Sanchez? You've already mentioned Wilfried Zaha in that context.
Zaha's knocking about. I mean, it's hard because we don't know what the plan is next season at a higher level than that.
Right. The problem with Theo Walcott.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, Wilshere's worked his
Chris,
way back
head
into
just
the
dropped.
Team.
Why?
Again, I'm being diplomatic.
Well, I can't believe a top six club has got themselves in this position. I really can't. With Sanchez and Ozil. Not one, but two world-class players. Contracts are running out in six, seven months' time. Mm. So they're devaluing each day. They could have sold Sanchez, possibly. We don't know. I'm sure you may know better, to Manchester City.
Well, Ian, what was the hold-up there?
Yes, they could have. Yeah, I mean, both clubs spoke. There was bids made, but Arsenal decided that it wasn't enough, and it didn't give them enough time to secure a replacement right at the end of the summer transfer window. Be very interested to see whether the return in January is definitely still on the agenda for them, despite the way that their season's been going. But they may just be able to wait until the summer and get him for free. Guardiola spoke in the press conference on Friday, right at the very end, and gave a very interesting response when asked about whether the return for Sanchez. His answer was, good question. A smile, a quick joke, didn't finish the sentence and walked out.
You have to wonder why they would at the moment.
Or go for Sanchez.
Sanchez is in horrible, horrible form. He's a shadow of himself. He's obviously really upset, and by all accounts behind the scenes, did not take the collapse of that move very well at all. But you also look at City and where they're strong in personnel and where they're weak in personnel. You'd want to put that money on fullbacks, get some cover, because Mendy's going to be out for a long time. If they lost Kyle Walker, that's where they need to spend the money, surely. Mm.
If Sanchez ends up at Manchester City, he will be in replace Aguero.
I do. Such a thing
really
cannot
do.
Be spoken of.
He doesn't play him too often. Took him off after 50-odd minutes on Saturday. I know they've got so many games that he will start a game, whether it's midweek or the following week, but I can just see that being good business. You know, Sanchez is younger. He'll come in January or at the end of the season on a free. I can see it as good business. You know, Aguero's cult hero status at Manchester City. But moving forward, Sanchez in for Aguero, I can see that happening. I just can't believe Arsenal got themselves in that state. So they've turned down 50 million. Mm. So they won't get anything. What other business does that? I just don't get Arsenal's thinking on Ozil and Aguero.
Guardiola has said, actually, and certainly from what I know as well, that Manchester City are actively looking at centre-backs for the January transfer window. So I think probably for the moment, certainly from what's been said so far, that seems to be their priority rather than Sanchez. But Sanchez for free next summer seems like an absolute no-brainer, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does rather. Second straight start for Jack Wilshere, who looked impressive. Meanwhile, less impressive were Newcastle, who have now had 8 defeats in their last 9, 1 point from 27. And that sort of the takeover business continues to stutter. They are now in the bottom three. As Sean Bamford says, looks like the title has sewn up, but is this going to be the most exciting season for years with a 12-team relegation zone? Who goes down for me? It's Swansea, West Brom and Newcastle, who just happen to be the three who are down there at the moment. And that might well be the case. Who else would you want to throw into that mix? How worried? I mean, even somebody up, and you would start, I guess, with Southampton in 12th and drop down from there, because everyone from Saints downwards is within a defeat of the bottom three. You've got Crystal Palace and West Ham roaring their way out of trouble. Who's your money on, Ian? Well,
right now, what you've got to remember is that things can go really bad really quickly. You had Blackpool a few years back, who had a fantastic start to the season.
Are we heading towards Watford with this?
Maybe. I just want to make that prediction right again. You also had Hull a few years back, who I think were fourth at Christmas, and won just a single game in the second half of the season. So pretty much, you'd be probably, even though it has been known, you'd probably say Leicester on 26 points are safe. Everyone else still in it. I did say Watford at the start of the season. I'm fairly sure there's enough there that they won't go down.
Mm. What's going on at Watford? Some people have been suggesting, and Chris, I don't know what your take would be on this, that whole Everton interest in Marco Silva has effectively distracted him enough and perhaps loosened his hold on the dressing room to the extent that they've had the run, 4 defeats in 5 now for the Hornets, a tidal wave of ill-discipline, 3 red cards in their last 3 matches, the latest Troy Deeney, of course, in this, a 4-1 home defeat to Huddersfield.
I think it's fair to say the Everton saga didn't help.
But does Silva. That actually impact on... It will take his eye off the ball, will it?
Well, it can affect him, but also the players, because they'll be thinking every day, well, actually, is he going to go? Because initially, he never really dismissed it, which I understand. Sometimes managers say, no, I'm definitely not going. And then the next week, they're parading the scarf of the team, and you know, we see it with players, but I fully understand why he behaved the way he did. But it's definitely taken an edge off Watford. I mean, they were free-flowing, they were brilliant away from home at the start of the season. Richarlison, for me, was almost the find of the season. But they've lost their edge. Troy Deeney, since the Arsenal game, has just self-imploded. He's been sent off twice.
Yeah, the irony, of course, of calling Arsenal out for the lack of testosterone, to put it in other words, but it's his own excess that seems to be the issue.
They've got some good players. The centre midfield boy, Doncoré.
Doncoré.
Yeah, he looks Vieira-like at times. He scored an outstanding goal against Huddersfield. I mean, that gets forgotten because of conceding 4 goals, the sending offs, and Huddersfield winning away and scoring away for the first time since the start of the season. But they're in transition and they need to get to January. And knowing the way that club runs, they'll bring in a number of players from various clubs around Europe and rejig their squad. And I think they'll be safe, but I think Ian's right. I think it's from 9 down.
I'd expect Watford is that they're always in transition. They're not a very forgiving club. And you just think back to Kike Sanchez Flores and the start that he made. And then he was booted out at the end of the season. I'd be a little bit nervous if I was Marco Silva.
It's the way they like it, though. Yeah. Isn't it? It's the way they like it. And the Watford fans they've accepted that now. That's the way their club is run.
How impressive, given your knowledge of the club, is what Huddersfield are up to for you?
It's a bit strange, really, because before the Watford result, they lost 5 out of the last 6.
Mm.
And you'd think, they're struggling here. But what they have done, they tend to pick up a result just when things may look a bit bad for them. So they got the Manchester United result out of absolutely nowhere. They beat West Brom. They've beaten teams where, on paper, they feel they've got a chance. So they've beaten Newcastle. They've beaten West Brom at home. Manchester United was a bonus for them. They hadn't won away. And I was thinking, if they don't pick up the results at home, they're going to struggle.
Mm.
But then they go to Watford, and it was a very controversial game, actually, when you look at the first goal, the sending offs. But then those 3 points, coupled with Southampton losing, Brighton on a poor run, and Bournemouth and Stoke, it just propels them up the table. So, yeah. Like Ian said, it looks good at the minute, right in the middle of the table. But they just have to be careful that they don't fall into sort of that mini slump, which a lot of teams have. Newcastle are having it now, and so are Brighton.
Yeah, it's still early, really, isn't it? It's cool. This could go a lot of different ways. West Brom, as you say, very much in that mix. Saints as well, getting beaten 1-0 was it at St Mary's, wasn't it?
No, it was at Chelsea. I was there.
Oh, you were there, Chris.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, in my work capacity.
Ah, nice one. Who were you having a look at?
Antonio Conte.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But he wasn't playing.
All right. This was closer than I think some would have predicted it.
Southampton started off pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Got Chelsea into one or two sort of good situations where they could have taken advantage of. Didn't do it. I mean, Gabbiadini started, which was quite strange for me because Charlie Austin has been scoring goals, and as soon as he came on for Gabbiadini, he had one effort saved and he poked another one wide, so in 20 minutes he had two chances, but Chelsea were comfortable and created some good chances, and then when Fabregas and Morata came on, I mean, it could have been 3 or 4,
right.
So they'll take the 1-0. Alonso felt Forster should have got it, but
yeah.
No, Chelsea, as they always do, they definitely find a way to win, whether it's Hazard or Alonso or Willian. And they're a very strong unit, Chelsea.
And the teams just above them in second place, Man United, also with victory, as I mentioned, 2-1 against West Brom. Dan R says, how is it possible to discuss the greatest Premier Leagues of all time and not mention any Man United sides? Because we were doing this kind of Man City, other than the greatest ever, you know? And we talked about Arsenal and Chelsea, and we even mentioned Milan, you know, back in the 90s, and Mourinho's Inter. And he says, Man United teams belong in this discussion, the teams that actually won the title, and in the case of 99 and 08, the only Premier League teams to win both the title and the Champions League, and later to be declared best teams in the world by winning the Intercontinental Cup or World Club Cup. Is it a wind-up, ignorance, hatred of Man United?
My favourite Manchester United team was the 94 team.
Okay.
The second team to win the title. Just so much pace and aggression. They were the absolute ideal of everything that Ferguson wanted his team to be.
So many alpha males in that team as well.
Yeah.
And talking to the former players, certainly the younger ones who came into the setup at that time, wow, that was an unforgiving dressing room.
Big drinking club as well.
There was that.
Stories about people being sent to get the drinks in, and it was like 22 pints of lager and a glass of champagne for Eric. And that's just straight after training. Right, down the pub. They were a brilliant team. They were my favourite.
But would they against City? That's the question. That's what Dan R wants
to know. Game's changed so much now.
Got more fierce.
It really has. Mm.
What
really
about the 08 team, though, for Manchester United? Because you can draw a very easy comparison. They knocked out Barcelona in the semi-finals of that competition, the Champions League that year, by drawing 0-0 away at the Camp Nou, and then going to Old Trafford and winning 1-0 at Paul Scholes' goal. And, you know, even Sir Alex Ferguson probably would have admitted that over those two legs, Barcelona were the ones who were, you know, dominating possession, creating chances. But that United team found a way because of their tactical discipline, because of their strength in defence. Obviously, Scholes scored a great goal, which helps. But, you know, I think that Manchester United team, in terms of being a tactically sophisticated side, would have had a chance against this Manchester City team, and you can sort of see how they would go about approaching that sort of match, because that was a very similar Barcelona side in style to this current City team.
Interesting. How do you think Bristol City are going to do against Man United this Wednesday in the League Cup quarterfinals, Chris?
Having an outstanding season, Bristol City, stuck by Lee Johnson last year when the natives were pretty restless.
Yeah. I mean, how remarkable was their loyalty to him? Because the numbers were pretty unforgiving at the time.
Yeah, they were. And when you look at what happens with championship managers, it was nearly half got rid of their managers last year.
Mm.
So it shows when an owner believes in the manager and believes in what he's trying to do. Obviously, there's a big change at Bristol as a city with sport. I mean, they're investing a lot of money into the football and rugby, etc. So they stuck by him and they're playing a certain way. It's almost without a number nine at times. They've got Jamie Patterson and Bobby Reid, who are both very small, very slight, very clever players in a 4-4-2. So they're almost like two withdrawn number nines. But they're playing ever so well, especially at home. It's going to be a real test for United. So good luck to them, because they've earned the right. I would think they'll finish in the top six, get in the playoffs. Very strong all over, strong spine. And if they keep it up, yeah, they could make a name for themselves and beat United.
You did Bristol City last week in the Football League show. What's your conclusion?
Yeah, they're a really good side. It's all the more incredible because the two seasons previous, they've kind of been held up by outstanding goal scorers, and Tammy Abraham and Jonathan Codger. Mm. And obviously, they've lost both of those. I think they only won one of their first five this season, and their form over the last 6-8 weeks has been outstanding. It really depends what kind of team Mourinho puts out, what kind of mindset they're in. But if they're, you know, if they are off the pace, if they don't take it seriously, Bristol City could do them.
The other League Cup quarter-finals... Oh, Man City are at Leicester. Yikes. Arsenal host West Ham. And Chelsea take on Bournemouth. That's interesting. There's two games we haven't mentioned yet from the weekend. Can you name them, Chris?
Bournemouth-Liverpool.
Exactly.
Because I missed it.
Oh, did you miss it?
I did. I was travelling back.
Did you catch the goals after?
I haven't seen him because I was covering the West Brom Manchester United game. I was travelling home, so I listened to it.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And Brighton Burnley,
which was less exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nil that one.
Didn't miss much there.
No, but the Liverpool. It was Liverpool back to, you know, now that Jurgen Klopp's learnt his lesson about team selection.
He
just left money out the side this time. Why did they suffer just the 4-0? Did you see this, Ian?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was some. They looked fantastic again, Liverpool. They kind of switched back on again.
Mm. Yeah, you thought when Coutinho hit that free kick and it just sort of kissed the inside of the post and came back across the goal mouth, and you thought, oh, it's going to be one of those days for him, isn't it? And then Coutinho launches his Diego Maradona impression, just cutting through everybody, and that was it. Bournemouth barely threatened. I think Defoe hit the post and that was it.
I was just about to mention that because they kept saying if that went in, it could have been a different game, but...
Could have lost 4-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to be fair, Liverpool had a bunch of chances as well. There was I mean, Salah seemed to... He's kind of a magnet for defenders, and he just kind of runs around the box with them trailing behind him. And he eventually got one in, despite the close attention. I'm not sure who. I think it was Charlie Daniels, wasn't it?
I think it was, again, half the team.
Yeah. Charlie Daniels and Joshua King both going off injured, so Bournemouth with one or two problems there, Ian.
I was very interested to hear Jurgen Klopp say afterwards that he needs this team to find more consistency, because isn't this the sort of Liverpool that we saw last year? Drawing at home against teams you'd expect them to beat, like West Brom, and then going to Bournemouth and doing that. This to me is a very similar Liverpool to last year. The defence has improved, hasn't it, as well, actually? You know, at the start of the season, certainly away from home, that was a big question mark, and things seem to have settled down there, despite the fact, obviously, I think we've talked about it before, their home defence has been very good all season. But, yeah, I just wonder just how much they have developed this year. And you know, I just feel like Klopp saying that they need to be more consistent, I think he's hitting... Obviously, it's his team, and you'd expect him to do that, but I think he's hitting the nail on the head there.
No. Fair enough. Who are they facing this weekend? Liverpool?
Arsenal on the Friday night.
Oh, wow, that's huge. Mm. Obviously, that's huge, James. Thanks for that. So, at Arsenal.
Yes. Mm.
And those games are usually pretty tasty.
Yeah, and Liverpool, I should say, Liverpool have conceded 17 goals on the road.
But not so
mostly
much of late.
Mostly against big teams.
Right.
Which I guess we can still include Arsenal as, particularly at the Emirates, where they're almost flawless.
That's huge.
Yeah, we'll find out a lot about Liverpool here. But I think ultimately they make too many individual mistakes, and I don't really want to single out the people again, but we know where they are. They need upgrades in a couple of positions. They're not that far off. And there has been a little bit of hysteria, possibly just from mischievous supporters of rival teams. But Klopp's Liverpool, they're a decent side.
Can I say it's mischievous?
What have I said?
Mischievous.
I've been getting that wrong for years.
Yeah, it's mischievous.
Yeah, we'll add that to the rack.
Coutinho's an issue as well, isn't he?
It's Coutinho, yeah. Not Coutinho. Yeah.
The totally pedantic show.
But yeah, you say it, James.
No, you said it right. I was agreeing with you. I thought you were correcting Ian.
No, I was saying Coutinho. Oh, what did you say?
Coutinho.
Yeah. Is an issue for them as well. I'd be very surprised if he was still at Liverpool next season. Mm. I don't think he'll go in January, but it does feel to me like that's going to come to a head at the end of the campaign.
Fair enough, but then, of course, football is full of surprises.
Tweet us at The Totally Football Show. Find us on Facebook and check us out at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
If you were excited by Ian's Bristol City chat earlier, you'll be delighted to know there's a whole show full of that kind of thing. It's called the Totally Football League Show, but then you knew that. What are you going to be discussing in Tuesday's edition, Ian?
We're going to be joined by Ali and George from the Not the Top 20 podcast.
Okay.
And we're going to be discussing...
Sounds appropriate for anything from our...
Oof! They were nominated as well.
Were they?
Yeah, FSF Awards.
Oh, were they?
So, you know, we got that in common. We're going to be talking about Sheffield Wednesday, having a real hard time of it at the moment, beaten at home by Wolves and very much at the wrong end of the table. We'll also take a look at Blackburn, who just keep winning games. Matt Stanger was up there at the weekend. And we'll have a little look at Crewe as well, because they actually won a game. I was a bit worried about them.
Are you going to salute Sunderland, who after 21 matches, 4 managers and 364 days, got their first home win?
Yes, and a special mention to the Sunderland Echo reporter who had spent a year in the job without writing about a home win at the Stadium of Light as well. So it's been a long time.
And of course they got it against Chris Coleman's former club, Fulham.
Yes, they did.
Funny
Fulham, another big, well-fancied team struggling this season. So, yeah, it's possible. I mean, Sunderland are out of the drop zone now. It's possible they might just make it.
Here's some questions. We're busy. It's kind of virtual postbag today, Ian. I think it's to do with the guests. Also, Star Wars. A lot of people writing in saying, Star Wars, what's it like? His stocking full of Mark Cole saying, is Last Jedi better than Crystal Skull? Which is it's a trick question.
Stockings, not this again, James.
No, let's not go there. There's an appropriate place you can find out what I think, but I think that it's interesting on the issue of Star Wars how the critics' reviews have been pretty much all excellent, with the exception of the one that I was involved in, but the public has been very mixed on it. I side with the public on this. But if you want, there is a podcast where we discuss all of this.
Man of the people.
Yeah, very much. Very much. Tom Banyard's got a question. Jimbo, can you ask Chris Powell if I saw him walking his dog wearing his Derby County jacket last week? If so, how did you manage to keep hold of the jacket? Was that you, Chris?
It certainly was me, yes.
Right. And what else did you take from Derby?
You shouldn't say the kit man will be ringing me.
Really?
No, just took my coat and boots. And,
is it one of those
laptop
ones that goes down to the ankle? Is it one of those?
Oh, not a full Arsene Wenger
no
blanket coat. No, it's not one of those. But keeps me warm.
Does
definitely
it? Well, that's
important.
Very much so. Producer Ben's just got very excited. He said, did you ever walk the dog with Nigel Pearson, who, of course, had that incident with dogs in the Carpathian Mountains? You're familiar with the incident?
Yeah, I very much so, yeah. He told me the whole story.
Did he?
Yes, he did, yeah. And
I've never like walked my dog with Nigel. He's some kind of latter-day Phil Brown. You don't mean that he's... The incident really happened, did it? Did anyone ever document it, in fact? That's one of the questions I have about the wild dogs in the Carpathian Mountains thing. Do we only have Nigel's word for it?
I think we had a few leads on it, didn't we?
Oh! It definitely happened. I've got to move on from that, Ian.
It definitely happened.
Sorry. Oh, yes.
Sorry, Chris, I've bowled you over.
That's seriously. Yeah. You described earlier somebody as the most misunderstood manager. I can't think who it was. Who was
Sven.
It? Oh, Sven, yeah. Mm. But is Nigel Pearson, is he a misunderstood man as well?
He trumps Sven for me.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because Nigel is...
scary.
He's very well-read.
Yes.
He's a very intelligent man. To many, many a journalist. Doesn't enjoy that side of things.
Which, talking to journalists?
Which is, we've seen it. We've seen it.
Mm.
Knows his football, very good coach, very good man manager, especially with staff, but I think he's misunderstood.
Has he ever just, apropos of nothing, just had a conversation about the perfect way to like get rid of a dead body or something like that?
Like, I've never had that conversation with him, no. Yeah. But, you know, when you look at his CV, his footballing CV as a manager, he should still be managing here. He's in the Belgium second division at the moment.
For the club that the Shevardnadze Prava zone.
Well played.
Well done. Yeah, I just know him as Top, the son, and that is true.
Right.
The son is known as Top, and yes, they own a club in Belgium, and they asked Nigel to manage him, and he's out there at the moment sort of reinventing himself.
How's he doing?
Started off really well. They've just hit a bit of a sticky patch. And the Belgian league is a bit, there's a lot of playoffs and two leagues. And I've got a feeling they're not going to make the playoffs this year. I'm not entirely certain.
I've got a feeling he's going to get offered a job, as indeed we hope will you, Chris.
Yeah.
In one of these, because it's going to be vacancies galore.
Yeah, I think he'll be back this season. Something tells me he'll be back at a big championship club.
Like a pottery type club? Do you think?
Oh, I didn't even think of them.
Did you not?
No.
All right.
But now I will.
Okay. Hey, here's Paul with a really tough question. Just the kind of question that you should not spring on your guests kind of towards the end. Paul says, what was your favourite and least favourite footballing moment of 2017? Boom.
I thought the saddest moment was Claudio Ranieri coming to an end. And the saddest bit being that it had to come to an end as well. It was absolutely the right decision. But having been there, you know, through the back end of that run and been in Leicester and, you know, been there in the street with thousands of people celebrating that night, it was, you know, kind of the story coming to a very, very somber end. But he's doing really well now, so that's all right. He's got Nantes in fourth, fifth.
Well, they were. I must admit, I didn't check what happened to them this weekend because they'd fallen away a little bit.
Fifth.
They're fifth now.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
I've got a moment.
Okay.
I don't know whether it's best or worst as such, but it's certainly probably the most bizarre moment of the year. And that was Pep Guardiola going onto the field to speak to Nathan Redmond. I still haven't got my head around that. I still can't make my mind up whether it was okay or not okay, exactly what he was trying to achieve. I just haven't got my head around that at all. It still, to me, feels like the most bizarre moment I've seen in a long time on a football pitch.
Mm. Yeah, I can't disagree with you too much there. Chris, anything off the top of your head in a positive or negative fashion that stuck with you?
Redemption for Spurs in the Champions League.
Right. The Real Madrid game?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were awful last year against Monaco, who many people didn't realise how good they were last year compared to this year.
Ghent, though?
Ghent, I mean, they were really poor last year. But to beat Madrid and Dortmund in a league that everyone expected them to finish third.
Yeah.
I mean, that is some highlight for them as a club. And it was the moment they've kind of arrived in the Champions League. I think everyone else has had a moment in the Champions League. I think Manchester City will have their moment this year, the way they're going.
To be fair, Spurs had a moment or two involving Gareth Bale against Inter in the Champions League, home and away.
Yeah.
But no, this was absolutely huge. But whenever I think of Spurs in the Champions League, I just think of Maicon.
Maicon, yeah. I felt for him that night. I really did. I really felt for him because it kind of ended his career. He's such a good player. More attacking than defensively over the years for Roma and in Italy. But... taxi for Maicon.
Is this first evidence of, like, you know, like you got the goalkeepers union? Is this like the fullbacks union that we've never heard of before?
Oh, there's always a fullbacks union because even Charlie Daniels yesterday against Mo Salah, he had a tough time, and I kind of felt for him a bit because Salah is just on fire at the moment.
He went off of a muscular problem. That tells you everything you need to
absolutely,
know.
Absolutely,
It's natural, though, that you identify because you understand the problems of your respective role.
I think you always, especially when you become a coach and a manager, you tend to gravitate initially to the positions that you know. So you like your defence and your fullbacks to be strong and maybe in the image of yourself. Yeah, and then you look at your midfield and your strikers. But, you tend to understand the way they see the game. I mean, you look at it for 24 years. I played for a long time. You see the game from the left back, so you see it front facing. You don't always see it from a centre forward who's got his back to goal. So you have to learn that. So as a coach, you actually learn other players' positions as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm.
We've got various other questions here about Italy, which I tell you what, we will save those for Thursday, particularly the ones talking about Roma and potential title challenges, because, Ian, it's ever so tight at the top in Serie A.
Very tight.
We'll talk about that on Thursday. Chris, was there anything you wanted to ask me before we conclude?
Yes, I can admit to a man crush on you, James.
Oh.
I've been married for a long time, okay?
So not a problem. Okay.
And I fell in love with Italian football because of you, and I fell in love with Parma.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Parma had Asprilla.
Yes.
Zola.
Uh-huh.
Taffarel.
Yes.
Benarivo.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to remember, I can't remember the two centre-backs, and one was red hair.
Oh, Apolloni.
Apolloni. There you go.
Yeah. And the other guy was called, and he was a really nice guy, tall fella.
Yes.
Because they had Alberto de Chiara.
Yes.
But that wasn't him. Oh, what was the guy? Minotti, Lorenzo Minotti.
Yes, there you go. I didn't want to look online. I know you can find out on various sort of websites.
You can do, can't you?
But
that was quite Apolloni. A team.
Ah, oh, that's why I fell in love with Italian football.
They brought in Massimo Crippa to just mess people up in he was an evil man.
This seems an appropriate moment as well. One of my best friends is a bona fide AC Milan fan who grew up in Oldham, based on James's broadcast.
Well, yeah. It was largely about the Italian football, but I was a part of it. Anyway.
There's a podcast that you can now subscribe to.
Oh, can you now subscribe to it?
I believe it's live on iTunes now.
That's brilliant. So we don't actually have to make the podcast.
No, we'll just keep the trailer on. Okay, totally Football cool. League Show went to number 2 without doing a single episode.
All right, and what happened after you started doing the episodes?
Yeah, not so good.
Okay, well, that's enough of all that kind of thing. Let's conclude by getting the odds from Paddy Power with Ian McIntosh.
Mr. Paddy Power, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you very much. We got movers and shakers today. Not much moving at the top of the table, though, is there?
Not really. Now, what are they, about 11 points clear now, is it?
Yeah, 14 points briefly, now down to a mere 11. What could I get on them to go unbeaten for the whole season?
With City, when the other teams do falter behind them, it must make them just... Like, the players themselves, although they'll be taking it week to week and one game at a time, they must know that they've pretty much won the league already. So I'd say they're a shorter price now. I think last week when we were talking about this, they were about 11-5. They've beaten Spurs, which was possibly a banana skin, but as it turned out, they were just not in the same parish. So I think they're still going to be a touch of odds against, but they're only going to be like 6-5 or something like that to go the season unbeaten, which if you think about it, is like just... It's ridiculously short odds because we're not even at Christmas.
I mean, it was a shock to see how far off their level Tottenham were. And they're now in seventh. They're behind Burnley. What odds on Spurs finishing outside of the top five?
I always thought Spurs, actually, they had their blip and they're back from their blip and they're back on and up. As it turns out, they are struggling a little bit. And I wonder, it doesn't feel like their fixtures have been that disastrous. And I guess when you look at them, they lost two of their last five, I think, isn't it? So it's not disaster, but their odds against, there would have been odds on to finish the top four about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Now their odds against are 7-4, they're 5-4 top four. So the odds on to be like twos on to finish outside the top four. So I'd say to finish outside the top five, maybe 3-1. I'm totally plucking it out of the air now, lads. 3-1. This year, putting my odds compilations to test, but hopefully you won't go back to bite me at the end of the season.
Going to hold you to this. Huddersfield, they hadn't scored a goal away from home for ages, and then they've gone off and absolutely battered Watford. Odds on them staying up must be pretty decent now.
Well, they're very short. Yeah, I mean, they're 3-1 to go down, which means they're about 1-5 to stay up. So it means they're like 75% likely or 80% likely to stay up now, which is good news for them. And the better news for them is that there's a load of rubbish around them at the wrong end of the table. There's a load of rubbish teams down there who are going to really struggle. So they have to be extra bad. Swansea are really in trouble. West Brom as well, they're in trouble too. They scored a goal in the end, but they haven't scored many. Newcastle are rubbish. I mean, there's a good few teams down there. So Huddersfield, I think, they won't be sitting on their laurels, but they certainly have it in them to be safe, definitely.
Well, I tell you, I thought Celtic winning the Scottish title was probably the safest thing in the world, but then that happened, that 4-0 defeat to Hearts. What can you get on Celtic to miss out, to not actually win the title for once?
Well, they're 1-66 to win it, 33-1 or something, like, not to win it. I mean, you should be getting 1,000-1, really. I'm embarrassed to tell you it's only 33-1 for them not to win the league. Can you imagine, though, was one of these collapses?
No.
Can you just imagine?
I really can't. I think 1,000-1 might be nearer.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. 18 plus only, of course. BeGambleAware.org. And remember, When the fun stops,
stop.
Thank you, Ian. And that's what we're going to do right now, because that's the end of this Totally Football show. Chris, thank you so much for coming here today. You're off to do your school Christmas fair, is that right?
I'm handing out the sports awards at my old school. I haven't been back for 30 years.
No way, you've not set foot and you're going back today?
Yes.
Wow, that's going to be so... I mean, that's going to be amazing.
And I found my old school tie, which I'm going to bring.
Brilliant.
So...
wear it round your head.
It won't be a good look. Yeah. Not at my age. But, yeah, I'm going back to say a few words and hand out some awards. So, yeah, interesting.
All right, excellent. Ian, are you doing anything interesting later today?
Yeah, we're talking to the fans around the world on Fanzone.
On Fanzone.
Premier League HQ. We'll have input from Africa, Australasia, South America, you name it. It's incredible. It blows your mind.
It's going to blow my mind tomorrow because I'm going to be doing it then. Woof! And then, and Ian?
We're going to go off and talk to a nice man from Gimlet about Italia 90 in a minute.
Oh, really? What, yeah. The World Cup?
Yeah, we're reminiscing. So look out for that in a few months' time.
Well, whatever you're doing, listeners, do it safely, enjoy Christmas responsibly, and we'll see you on Thursday.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.